The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the Law Amendments Committee heard from more than 100 Nova Scotians about the government's gutting of the film industry. They were clearly of no confidence in the government's new funds, Mr. Speaker. What they do know is that the Premier broke his promise to the industry and that over 2,000 jobs remain at risk as a result. Scott Simpson was very clear when he called the government's new plan a band-aid solution and said it was too little, too late. I'd like to ask the Premier, does he really believe that a band-aid is acceptable for a $150 million industry and the 2,700 jobs that go with it?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I don't agree at all that this is a band-aid. Mr. Speaker, this is a step forward in the right direction. This is providing a film tax credit, Mr. Speaker, goes well beyond labour. It impacts every service that is provided by a Nova Scotia company that is related to the production of that film, Mr. Speaker. I think that's a good move forward. That is something that the Screen Nova Scotia has endorsed, as well as the Honourable Member that's referred to by the Honourable Member Scott Simpson was also part of that discussion. They endorsed it, Mr. Speaker. We're looking forward to move forward and getting on with it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, let's be clear. Scott Simpson said there is no deal. There is no deal. This is a band-aid. And no wonder. The Premier can't keep his story straight from one day to the other. He spends a year saying that incentives like this should only be tied to jobs, and then completely flips around and says, no, we should spread it out away from jobs, which is what his new fund actually does. No wonder they've lost faith in the government. Today, there is an announcement about a digital animation tax credit, which is tied to jobs, Mr. Speaker. No wonder the industry is confused and worried. I'd like to ask the Premier, will he extend the same courtesy to the film industry, that is, that there is no cap on their ability to grow, as he has extended today to the digital animators of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I again want to tell the Honourable Member that the film tax credit is 25% across all labour, not just those involved in the making of the production, Mr. Speaker, those that potentially are renting a hotel room. Mr. Speaker, that's valuable labour in this province, and we believe it should be recognised. The Honourable Member doesn't. Those, Mr. Speaker, that are providing services directly to those in the production. We believe those Nova Scotians should be respected as well, Mr. Speaker. We believe those jobs are valuable in this province. The Honourable Member obviously doesn't. We've moved forward in that is not only respecting taxpayers, Mr. Speaker, but allowing the industry to move forward and ensuring that all of the investment Nova Scotians are making are being spread across a number of genres, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, let me tell you what I believe. I believe when a government makes a promise to the film industry before the election that they should keep it after the election, Mr. Speaker. And above all, that we should work to create jobs and encourage the jobs that we have now and not actually cut a growing industry off at the knees as this government has done. And Bruce Swicker has said it as well as anyone. He testified at law amendments that he's already lost two projects that can't ever be found again, Mr. Speaker, because the government did not know what it was doing when it brought in its changes to the film tax credit. And Mr. Speaker, they're all still wondering, are they capped or are they not capped? So will the Premier make one promise right now to the film industry that he can keep, and that is that no eligible project will be turned down no matter when they apply in the fiscal year.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, let me inform the Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker, exports are up, population is growing, Mr. Speaker, GDP forecasts are going in the right direction, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians are embracing the direction this government's moving forward, and we're going to continue, Mr. Speaker, to work with Nova Scotians who are looking towards the future, not a member across the hall who keeps looking over his shoulder.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, the McNeill government claims it's working to improve access to home care, but the statistics suggest otherwise, Mr. Speaker. In the past year, the wait list has doubled, and as a result, more people than ever are taking up hospital beds because they just can't get care at home. But, Mr. Speaker, instead of trying to recruit more home care workers, this Premier has decided to pick yet another fight. He's taking away the collective rights of home care workers with Bills 30 and 37, and now he's threatening to reduce their pay through privatization. Today, 1,200 home care workers are prepared to resign, Mr. Speaker, because of this government's actions. So my question for the Premier is this. At a time when his government is promising to increase access to home care, why are hundreds of home care workers threatening to resign?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to remind all Nova Scotians that, Mr. Speaker, we protected the collective bargaining rights of health care workers across the province. I also want to remind, Mr. Speaker, the only time that someone's rights were suspended from striking, Mr. Speaker, was done by the NDP government, when it was the paramedics, Mr. Speaker. And I'm sure if she leans over and talks to the former Minister of Health, he can remind her that it was her government and his government that took away the right to strike from health care workers in this province, not this one. Mr. Speaker, again, I also want to remind the Honourable Member, it is only her and the leader of the NSGEU are talking about reducing people's wages. This government is investing in Nova Scotians who are delivering health care in Nova Scotia, and we will respect what they've earned, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier makes me laugh. You know, at public accounts this morning, we heard that the money that, with a small, minuscule bit of money saved by this government on the amalgamation hasn't been reinvested in the health care system. And in fact, more cuts are coming, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, on the 12th of September, 2012, the Premier signed a 5-point quality public service protection plan for Nova Scotians, which I'll table, Mr. Speaker. This plan promised that public services wouldn't be privatized or contracted out without public consultation. So, Mr. Speaker, the Health Minister has announced without public consultation.
Does the Honourable Member have a question?
His plan for home care. My question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, why is he moving ahead with the privatization of home care services without first seeking public consultation that can inform a plan to improve patient care, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member is simply wrong. She couldn't be more wrong, Mr. Speaker, but the Minister of Health has a responsibility, as we do as a government, to ensure that we're delivering services the most cost-effective way to this province, Mr. Speaker. Unlike the New Democratic Party, there is no great big money tree sitting out somewhere in this lot for us to go cut down to do and spend the kind of money that government spent when they were in power, Mr. Speaker. We will protect workers' rights. We will deliver services on behalf of the people of this province. And, Mr. Speaker, we will do it in a fiscal envelope that Nova Scotians expect us to do it in.
Now I'm a leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We will protect workers' rights. Mr. Speaker, coming from the Premier, that is absolutely laughable. Mr. Speaker, home care workers provide care for the elderly, the disabled, and the chronically ill. These compassionate and well-trained workers make, on average, $18 an hour, Mr. Speaker, and they deserve to be treated fairly and with respect. So my question for the Premier is this. Will the Premier assure the home care workers who are at the House today and not at the House but working across this province that privatization will not lead to a reduction in their pay, in their benefits, or in their collective rights, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I will tell home care workers across this province the only government in recent history that trampled on the rights of workers in this province was the Democratic Party, Mr. Speaker, when they took away the right to strike, Mr. Speaker, from paramedics. We brought in a piece of legislation, Mr. Speaker, that ensured that the health care services will be in place across our province for Nova Scotians who need them, at the same time protecting the rights of health care workers in their collective bargaining process, Mr. Speaker. And let me be clear, as one of those Nova Scotians families who have been able to be supported by home care workers across this province, this government, this Premier, respects home care workers across this province and will respect them as we move forward. Unlike that party that only wants to use them as a political football. When they had an opportunity to respect them, they were silent.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, there have been five meetings across this province where hundreds of people who are concerned about the government's plan for the future provision of home care services have gathered. They include home care clients and the families that rely on this service, Mr. Speaker, and they do deserve to know what the government's plans are to maintain the quality of service to the users, the clients of our home care services. Mr. Speaker, they are the ones who should not be lost in the debate, the people who rely on home care services every day and their families. So I'd like to ask the Premier, what guarantees are in place to ensure the high level of care provided by our home care providers will be there for their clients under any future plans the government has?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank the Honourable Member for his question, Mr. Speaker. In any move, in any direction we go forward, every decision that we make when it comes to health care, Mr. Speaker, is focused and solely based on the patient, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that they are getting the high quality of service that they've come to expect, Mr. Speaker, and it will be in place for them.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the families that rely on home care services, the clients themselves and the caregivers around them, need to know that this government will protect the level of care that they get, that they will ensure that there is a standard, enforceable, high level of care, no matter what road the government chooses to go down. And I appreciate that the Premier has hinted that there will be some look at the level of care, but I'd like him to guarantee now that no matter what, the government will make sure that there is a high standard of care written into any future contracts that is enforceable and that will be monitored and called on when needed.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, and I again want to remind this House, Mr. Speaker, we as a government and all Nova Scotians respect and value the work being done by home care workers across this province, and any changes that we make, Mr. Speaker, will only be to give them more tools to enhance the high quality of care that Nova Scotians have come to expect.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Angela Giles, who's with us today here in our gallery. Her dad, Paul, has been living with multiple sclerosis and receiving home care for several years. The Giles are concerned about the McNeill government's decision to open up provincial health care contracts to competitive bidding, including from private for-profit providers. We fear that the quality of service will change, says Angela, that his workers will change, that they will not receive benefits and a living wage, and more cancellations will result. And this is causing stress for Mr. Giles and his daughter. So my question to the Premier is this. Why is the Premier considering changes to the way home care is delivered in Nova Scotia without first consulting with families like the Giles?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to welcome Mrs. Giles here to this house, and I want to reassure her and her father, Mr. Speaker, that the high quality of care that she has come to expect will be in place for her. But I also want to say, Mr. Speaker, to this house, it is not helpful when leaders of unions and opposition parties began to create false narratives. There's never been a conversation about reducing benefits, taking wages away from health care workers in this province. But governments have a responsibility, no matter what the service is, to have a look at it. Is there a way to deliver that service? Are we delivering it in the best possible way? Because after all, Mr. Speaker, the decisions we make in this House affect Angela, her family, and her father, and families just like theirs across this province. And the debate should be based on the fact, not the kind of rhetoric that's coming across the aisle.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very clear about what my job is, Mr. Speaker, and it's to inform...
Order, please.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party has the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and it's my job to inform the people of this province. When the government has plans that they haven't articulated and consulted the people of, it's my plan to come here and ask this Premier why he won't consult and why he won't explain to the people what the impact of his plans are. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I will continue to ask those hard questions, Mr. Speaker. We agree that there's a need to look at home care services and improve them, Mr. Speaker. However, there is fear among patients, around workers, and around organizations that deliver home care for what this government's plans are.
Mr. Order, Speaker, please. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has a plan to reduce expenditure for
question,
home care.
The question.
And I want to ask the Premier, Mr. Speaker, if he is committed to reinvesting in the home care system any expenditures, efficiencies that he receives from his reorganization so patient care can improve, not decrease, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member is wrong on every count. Every time she stands up, she's absolutely wrong, Mr. Speaker. The budget that's gone through this House is an additional $30 million in home care, Mr. Speaker. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, she's absolutely wrong when she says we did not consult with families, Mr. Speaker. The Continuing Care Advisory Group, Mr. Speaker, and consulted with families across this province. Have we consulted with every family, Mr. Speaker? Of course we couldn't do that. But we've engaged Nova Scotia. And, Mr. Speaker, this is about ensuring that we keep the top quality care that we have as we go forward. There's never been a conversation about reducing budgets, reducing benefits, Mr. Speaker. It has only come from the leader of the Democratic Party and the union leaders who think there's a benefit in stirring up families, Mr. Speaker. And it's unconscionable that a member of this House would join in that kind of rhetoric.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. TransCanada has scrapped plans to use the Energy East pipeline to export crude oil from a site in Quebec, and the company is currently looking for alternatives. This presents an opportunity for Nova Scotia to be an export hub for the Energy East project. So my question for the Minister is the government making the business case to TransCanada to extend the Energy East project to Nova Scotia for export?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Speaker, we continue to talk to all of our partners, especially with TransCanada, to see what opportunities may be there for Nova Scotia. Speaker, I will be meeting with representatives from that company in the very near future to impress upon them the opportunities that lie here in Nova Scotia to have that pipeline extended to our province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'm encouraged to hear about that meeting because the CBC article from February says that TransCanada hasn't even considered Nova Scotia as a possibility for export. When we asked about extending the Energy East project to Nova Scotia, the Premier said last October, the fact of the matter is there's lots of work happening inside government on it. At that time, he said there was lots of work happening. inside the government. And we have TransCanada saying they haven't even considered Nova Scotia. So the reality is this project represents significant opportunities for our local energy supply chain. So my question for the minister is, when will the lots of work that the government has been doing start to flow with some positive momentum for extending the Energy East pipeline to Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it's hard to take a question from the member from Pictou East seriously, and I've been here for 17 years and I've seen quite the cast of characters come and go. Mr. Speaker, earlier today, the member for Pictou East referred to himself as Joseph Howe. But Mr. Speaker, on behalf of all Nova Scotians and on behalf of the members of this House, let me say to that member loud and clear, you, sir, are no Joseph Howe.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, many years ago, Gerald Barton was falsely convicted for statutory rape. The justice system got it wrong. He was innocent. Imagine your life, the best years of your life, being taken away from you as you struggle to find employment, falsely branded as a rapist. The Marshall Commission recommended an independent judicial inquiry be held to determine compensation when a person is wrongfully convicted. Will the minister follow the spirit and recommendations of the Marshall Inquiry and order an independent judicial inquiry to consider compensation for Mr. Barton?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the question. I sympathize with Mr. Barton. This matter is still potentially in the court system, and I'm afraid I can't speak to any aspects of it at the moment. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we know that last month the Nova Scotia Court of Appeal denied Mr. Barton's request for compensation. And I believe the justice system got it wrong again. This government had to be shamed into extending rights to historic victims of sexual abuse and assault. Mr. Speaker, do we have to shame them again to do the right thing for Mr. Barton?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is public, the decision ruled there were no blame from the department, from the government, from the province. Having said that, I can't speak to any other specifics of it because there is still the potentiality of it going to a higher court. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today in public accounts, we learned from the new CEO of the Nova Scotia Health Authority, Janet Knox, that the health authority has no plan in place to deal with the over 500 surgeries that were cancelled due to the issue with the sterilization equipment at the QE2. This is a backlog of over 500 surgeries on an already long wait list for cataracts, hip and knee and replacement, and so on, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the minister, why is it taking so long to come up with a plan to address the nearly 500 cancelled surgeries that we've seen here at the QE2?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm sure the CEO of the Nova Scotia Health Authority, Janet Knox, didn't go into all of the details around how the plan is currently evolving. But we know there will be 2 days of additional surgeries going on at Scotia Surgery. Areas where ophthalmology can be done are also being investigated. And the good news, Mr. Speaker, is that as of today, we are at or approaching 100% of all surgeries being done and now starting to look after the postponed surgeries.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, it's Ms. Knox herself who indicated there wasn't a plan to address all the cancelled surgeries. Mr. Speaker, because the new health authority has no plan in place to deal with the massive cancellation of surgeries, it has engaged, we learned today, the service of a private health centre to help deal with the backlog of surgeries. I'm sure for patients who have found their surgeries cancelled, this decision will be most welcome, Mr. Speaker. However, private health care centres are unable to meet the surgical needs of many of the patients whose surgeries were cancelled throughout the last month. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, how much longer will patients have to wait to have their surgeries rescheduled?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can assure the member opposite is that I have great confidence in the CEO. She will have a plan. That plan will be executed, and we'll see all postponed surgeries done in as timely a manner as possible.
The honourable member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'm certainly no Joe Howe, but I know the answer when I don't get one, so I'll try again. A CBC article from February said that TransCanada hasn't even considered Nova Scotia as a possibility for export. We asked the Premier back in October if he was working on extending the Energy East program, and he said, the fact of the matter is, there's lots of work happening inside the government on it. I think at the time he made some comments about just not posing for photo ops while he was doing it. So there's lots of rhetoric in here today. Doesn't take away from the fact this is an important question. The Energy East pipeline has tremendous opportunities for this province. The minister can make some jokes about it if he wants, but I'll ask a certain question again. When will the lots of work that the government has been doing by their own admission for the last 8 months start to show some results and we can see some positive momentum towards the Energy East pipeline to Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Speaker, the fact is that the terminal for which the pipeline, if was adopted, would come is actually in my backyard. So forgive me if I don't really take lecturing from the member for Pictou East about this file seriously. Mr. Speaker, the fact is that we have talked with TransCanada. They have a number of other partners that are involved with that project and have made it clear that their prime destination at this point is to St. John, New Brunswick. We have impressed upon them, as has the previous minister, as has the premier, about the advantages of bringing that pipeline to the Strait area, where we have been handling oil and crude products for many years in a safe, environmentally responsible way. There are opportunities there for us. We'll continue to impress upon them. They are a private company. They will have to make their own decisions, but I assure you, we will continue to impress upon that for all Nova Scotians.
Yama member for Pictou East. Yeah, I'm a member for Pictou Center.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister of Education, Early Childhood Development. Mr. Speaker, during the recent Liberal Party's AGM, the Liberals passed a motion calling on their government to immediately begin planning to implement a universal, affordable educational child care strategy for Nova Scotia. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. In his convention remarks, the Premier told delegates that he wants to start having the conversation about a provincial daycare program. My question to the minister, is a universal daycare program on the Liberals' agenda, yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member for the question. And as with all resolutions that come out of any AGM, we certainly take them with respect, we review them, and we look at what we can do. But I have to tell the member and all members of the House that we're not waiting for a resolution from anyone. We're looking at what we can do with respect to daycare in the province, and that's why at this point in time, the daycare is already under review. There's an online questionnaire for people to respond to. We are looking at things like accessibility, affordability, and quality. And so anyone in this House or anyone that they want to talk to who is interested in daycare, I would encourage them to go to the website, complete the survey, and give us the information that Nova Scotians want us to have as we move forward with daycare.
Yeah, I'm a member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Minister for that reply. Mr. Speaker, a universal provincial daycare program would be a costly endeavour. The province of Quebec is currently reforming their universal daycare program because it has become too expensive for taxpayers. My question to the Minister, has there been any research by the government with regard to the costs of a universal provincial daycare program?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the daycare review that is already underway looks at more than just the input from parents and from people in the community. It does a cross-jurisdictional scan. It looks at what the research says. And so we will have all of that information, including, as I said, the reaction response from Nova Scotians before we move forward with our daycare plan.
Yeah, I'm a leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last night in Law Amendments Committee, we heard workers in the film industry raise concerns about the McNeill government's replacement of the film tax credit with an inferior model. Matthew Lumsley, an actor who lives in my constituency in Halifax Needham, raised concerns that the new tax credit model weakens the benefit of hiring local Nova Scotia labour. Matthew stated that by moving from the current labour-based credit to an all-spend Alberta model removes the principal benefit of the tax credit to Nova Scotia, which is creating film jobs in Nova Scotia for Nova Scotians. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Why does he continue to move forward with a change that will throw Nova Scotians working in the film and TV industry out of work?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to again remind the Honourable Member the new program provides 25% of the labour costs of Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, that's a substantial benefit to hiring Nova Scotians into that. But it also broadens, Mr. Speaker, the benefit film production across all of the benefits in Nova Scotia, which is an all-in spend, Mr. Speaker, meaning the hotel rooms you rent in this province, any goods and services that you would buy in this province from hardworking Nova Scotians could be part of that 25%. Mr. Speaker, this is not a reduction. This, Mr. Speaker, is broadening the benefit so that more sectors in the province can benefit from their own taxpayer money.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think for the Nova Scotia film workers who live here, they'd prefer to have a job here, not see people coming in and renting hotels and taking their work, Mr. Speaker. With the film tax credit that the McNeill government is eliminating, Nova Scotia-based productions have a strong incentive to hire Nova Scotians instead of bringing in actors, camera operators, editors, and costume designers from their headquarters in Toronto or LA. A labour-based credit creates jobs, and those people pay taxes, put down roots, start their families, and create a demand for goods and services here in our community. So my question, Mr. Speaker, is why does the Premier not delay his changes to the film tax credit to give his government more time to understand the industry and not risk killing Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member raises the question that she is suggesting to everyone in this House and all Nova Scotians that the government paying 25% of someone's salary is not enough. No wonder Nova Scotians took the checkbook away from them.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, the Recreation Facility Development budget was cut in half. That tells us, Mr. Speaker, the government doesn't value that. They don't value the opportunity to improve people's health and wellness. And I think about leveraging, Mr. Speaker. I think about in the member for Richmond's constituency. I know that he would have organizations coming to the government. Traditionally, they could get up to a third of funding. With the program is cut in half, Mr. Speaker, with such few funds remaining, they're likely only to get about a sixth of the funding. They used to use that as a basis to get other funding, to leverage from other partners. Does the minister understand what he has done and how it will affect the ability of volunteer organizations to leverage funding from other partners?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Inverness for the question. And, I know that right across all of our departments, we've had to reduce some of the traditional grants that went out across the province. In this particular instance, we have not sent out a final word on what percentage will be provided to the Recreation Facilities Fund, and that is currently being worked on. We know some projects are not ready for this year.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, a lot of these groups used in-kind labour materials donated locally to top off the remaining funds that would be needed to complete projects. Now, that was possible if there was a shortfall of 10% to 15%. But I expect in the future, with this reduction in funding, there's either going to be no project funding for some groups, or projects that receive the limited funding they do get, they're probably going to be 50% shortfall for those projects, because they're not going to be able to leverage as much from other groups, because oftentimes that's matching funding. Is the minister aware of the rule under the RFD program that funding will not be awarded to organizations who cannot assemble the remainder of project funds, which with this change is going to be a lot harder for them?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And what I can say to the member opposite, it's interesting that a number of our regional directors, have pointed out that some of these projects can be delayed because, again, some of the organizations, while they've put in their request, they have not done the fundraising to get the one-third or the portion of a project that they feel that their community should be raising. And so there's a bigger look at this whole process than simply handing dollars to the organizations. As valued as they are and the projects that will benefit their communities, there needs to be that due diligence on how much fundraising they have actually done.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Providing proper support for children with autism is extremely important and provides tremendous help to those living with autism and their families. And we spoke a lot about it in this House of Assembly over the last number of weeks. Autism affects families all across Nova Scotia, including Acadian families. And while some new spaces have been opened up for the EIBI program, many families are still waiting, sometimes delaying when children can attend school. One major obstacle, Mr. Speaker, for some children with autism is whether the language spoken at home is English or French, being able to communicate. So my question to the Minister, do Acadian families have access to the same services as English-speaking families in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. One of the areas that I know we do an exceptional job on is those therapists that go into homes across Nova Scotia. One of our current problems is having the number of psychologists to actually do the assessments on our children to make sure that indeed they are on the autism spectrum, or is there some other developmental issue that is a problem around language and other early developments? And in terms of the actual number of families that don't have a French therapist, I will get that number from the department for the member opposite.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Well, I hate having to answer questions my own questions to this House, but the answer is no. They don't have the same opportunity as English-speaking children right now. Researchers at the IWK, in collaboration with Réseau Santé Nouvelle-Écosse, are launching a research project to identify the service needs of Acadian and Francophone families in Nova Scotia who are dealing with challenges of autism. And in the Yarmouth Vanguard, Paul D'Entremont, president of Réseau Santé Nouvelle-Écosse, said, and I'll table that, the information gathered from this research will help shape the development of services for Acadian and Francophone families and children affected by autism spectrum disorder in Nova Scotia. I will table that. So my question to the minister is, could the minister inform the House of his department's involvement in this research project, and will he commit to implementing recommendations of the research to improve services available to Acadian and Francophone families who are touched by autism?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know this is an area that remains very important to our government. We're investing through the budget this year $1 million directly, as well as additional funds through the department. And certainly having therapists who are trained in the first language of children is very, very important. And that will be an area that we certainly will be very receptive to those recommendations.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question's to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the Ivany Report says it's critical that our workplaces have greater participation by minority and disadvantaged people in Nova Scotia. The report says clearly that to achieve that, it requires active commitments by business and community leaders, as well as government. But, Mr. Speaker, it doesn't seem as though the Premier read that part of the report. Again this year, organizations who bring minorities and disadvantaged people into our workplace are being phased out by the McNeill government. My question, Mr. Speaker, can the Premier tell us how many organizations who increase workplace participation for minorities and the disadvantaged have had their funding cut again this year?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Again, I want to thank all of our partners who help us deliver services to the people of this province. Mr. Speaker, we have a great relationship with organizations who are helping minority groups participate in the workforce. We're seeing some positive signs. I was very excited this weekend to be on Member 2, a relationship that we have with our Mi'kmaq, Mr. Speaker, and always the conversation comes around how they're underrepresented. We've seen stuff putting in fair hiring practices. We're continuing to be encouraged that. But I want to remind the Honourable Member, she left a financial mess here in this province, and we're doing everything we can, and we've asked all Nova Scotians to help her participate in that. That includes organizations that work with us on behalf of the good people of this province.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'll remind the Premier he created the financial mess as an image. That's not factual. Mr. Speaker, the One Nova Scotia report calls for an increase in youth and African Nova Scotian employment and for enhanced efforts to support inclusion of our visible minority communities. The Black Business Initiative is one example of an organization who works tirelessly to increase minority participation in our workforce. But for the second consecutive year in a row, their funding has been slashed by both the federal Conservatives and the provincial Liberals. Since the Premier did not know the numbers of cuts, can the Premier explain now how cutting funding to the BBI is helping to meet the goals laid out in the Ivany Commission?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for her question. I want to remind her and all Nova Scotians we continue to work as a government to ensure underrepresented members of our population are reflective in our provincial organizations. We see that in the Education Department, where we're recruiting African Nova Scotians as teachers, Mr. Speaker. We're seeing it in other departments that we have across this province. And let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, there was no illusion by any Nova Scotian about the financial mess in this province. There might have been a delusion coming out of the other side, but there was no illusion about the financial mess we're in.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. On several occasions, the Premier and some of his ministers have talked about the exciting news around the Donkin mine. It even appeared in the budget document, and there's no question it is exciting. Could the Premier please tell the people of the Donkin area where that project is in relation to his government?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Minister of Natural Resources, who's been working with the Klein Group to ensure that the Donkin mine comes back into production. We're now in the process of that mine being pumped out and continuing to move forward. We're very encouraged. The Klein Group has been very receptive to this province and working with the government, but more importantly, working with the community. The way they've gone out and brought in and had public consultations, they've committed not only to ensuring that that coal is brought out of the mine, but it's actually that it's done by Nova Scotians. And we're continuing to look forward to them. And it's our hope that they will continue at the pace they are, which means, Mr. Speaker, to the Honourable Member, that they will be either on or ahead of schedule.
The Honourable Member for Sydney River, Myra Lewisburg.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank the Premier for that answer and the fact that he got the geography right. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier guarantee to the people of Donkin that his government will ensure the right infrastructure will be in place, like roads and sidewalks, before the project goes too far?
The Honourable Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to ensure the Honourable Member that we'll continue to work with the community to make sure that we bring that mine into production, making sure that that resource is being used here in our province, that the jobs that are available will be made to Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, I welcome the day, Mr. Speaker, when we actually have that mine in activity. We're generating the revenue. We're generating the resources that can come forward. And then we can have the discussion, Mr. Speaker, on what services that we spend it on for that community.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. It's about the maintenance enforcement report. Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of people waiting to see this report. Single parents out there, mostly single moms, are taking on debt. They're spoiling their credit ratings. They have the stress of money problems on top of the challenges of raising a family by themselves. The report was due in April. Raising the question here, Mr. Speaker, to put a little pressure for the sake of these people that we see this report soon, can the Minister give us an update?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. Maintenance enforcement plays a vital, important role in our province, and it estimates the member asked that question, and I didn't say April, but I do expect to receive it probably before the end of May, but I never said April. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I was sure I heard April on budget estimates. Perhaps we can check the transcript on that one, but in any case, Mr. Speaker, these people are waiting for this report. Surely the minister has been following the progress of the report. Can the minister give us some indication if there's any recommendations? And I think of one in particular. There are people who are working illegally under the table as a way of hiding their earnings so they can't be garnished. Are there going to be any recommendations, for example, that would address that matter?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The report will deal with a number of items. Again, in terms of the specifics of what exactly is in it, I'm going to wait till I actually receive it. But one of the most important things that will be in it is how does government deliver the best client service that it can to Nova Scotians who desperately need this program? Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Queens, Shelburne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Health and Wellness. Mr. Speaker, the McNeill government has cut $1 million from the Recreation Development Fund, and this fund helps communities, organizations, and municipalities in rural Nova Scotia build facilities and improve existing ones. Yesterday, when the Minister was asked about these cuts, he replied, and I quote, "By everyone showing a little bit of strength and fiscal health right now, I look forward to the day when our government will be able to make real announcement." End of quote, and I'll table in documents. Mr. Speaker, I would have thought that this government would want to make real announcements about investing in the health of Nova Scotia now. Mr. Speaker, why isn't the minister taking a proactive approach to investing in the health of Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for that important question. And we know that this is a very, very important fund to help build physical fitness and recreation projects for our communities. In effect, if we had a request, six of those projects at $150,000 can actually cover most of that cut of this year. Many of those projects will still go forward, and perhaps members like yourself will have the opportunity to actually announce them in your local community.
The Honourable Member for Queen's Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, investments made through the Recreation Development Fund are largely used by children and youth to get active and have fun. These investments also support the Minister's Thrive program, but now are being dramatically cut. Mr. Speaker, rural communities will be the hardest hit by these cuts, as small communities, groups, and municipalities will not be able to afford these projects. Rural communities wants to invest in sports and recreation, and rural communities, Mr. Speaker, wants to thrive. Mr. Speaker, can the minister explain how cutting Recreation Development Fund will support the department's Thrive program?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I know the Recreation Facilities Program does support the whole approach of Thrive. And the good news is that most of these projects will be able to go forward this year. Some are not as ready as the communities thought they would be at this stage. And within a matter of a few weeks, those projects will get announced across the province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Fisheries. One of the recommendations in the report on the Maritime Lobster Panel suggests that industry and governments come together to develop and implement a comprehensive generic marketing and promotion campaign for Canadian lobster. The Lobster Panel, which did an extensive review of the lobster industry, supported the Lobster Council of Canada on this. Does the minister support the Lobster Council of Canada?
The Honourable Minister of Aquaculture and Fisheries.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We are definitely in support of marketing, generic marketing, and other marketing that has to be done for lobsters in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I had the great pleasure to meet a number of fishers this past weekend in Pictou West, and they're very supportive of a levy and working with you as well as with recommendations around the Lobster Council of Canada and would like to come together. So I'm going to extend an invitation to come to Pictou West and speak to the fishers, the buyers, the processors, so that we can hopefully come to some type of resolve with regards to this levy fee. So would the minister please accept our invitation?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
I'd be delighted to do that.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Health and Wellness. The government's failure to honour their promise to the OBGYNs has forced a lot of doctors to consider leaving Nova Scotia. Wait times are already incredibly high in Cape Breton, and the loss of the OBGYNs would only make matters worse. Women in Nova Scotia should not have to drive great distances for health care because the government did not fulfill their commitment. So my question to the minister is, what does the minister plan to do for Nova Scotia women if OBGYNs leave as a result of their broken promise?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the very, very important question around maternal health and the delivery of babies across Nova Scotia. We know that CMPA now and the more than 100% increase in their fees has become a national issue. Deputy ministers across the country are working to deal with it in the short term, but also to look at perhaps some alternatives to CMPA. We know that that issue has to get resolved, but there are a number of other issues that our gynecologist obstetrician also need to have addressed.
Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Physician Resource Plan says the number of OBGYNs in Cape Breton would have to double in order to meet the need. And Mr. Speaker, in speaking to one of the OBGYNs on the weekend, there's at least two that are planning on giving up practice of obstetrical call and obstetrical service in Cape Breton. The government's making it difficult for obstetricians to practice in Cape Breton and here in Nova Scotia. This does not send a positive message to medical students looking to specialize in this area or other obstetricians considering coming to Nova Scotia. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, does the minister realize his broken commitment will have an impact on recruitment and retention in the future of this important industry?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I want to say is that the current support to the insurance program for obstetrician gynecologists is currently part of the master agreement. We know that we'll work to their satisfaction. And also next week, I will be meeting with obstetrician gynecologists from across the province.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now, the Honourable Government House Leader on a quick introduction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Joining us in the East Gallery are some of my municipal colleagues from the Strait area, specifically from the beautiful county of Inverness. We have Monsieur Alfred Poirier from the Chetty Camp, Saint-Joseph de Moines area, who's a great champion of his Acadian community and the people of Inverness, as well as Councillor Dwayne MacDonald, who's here as well, who's been a champion of transit issues for the people of the Strait area, and I'd ask the House to give them a warm welcome.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Can you call private members' public bills for second reading?
We'll now call private members and public bills for second reading.
Can you call bill number